The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Welcome, everyone, to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast for the comic that doesn't exist at the moment. So we will talk about the Doom Patrol until it comes back, and possibly after it comes back. Anyway.
Maybe. Yes, hello. I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on our Facebook page. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And don't forget, you can check us and our fellow podcasting friends out on innercirclecomics.com for more comics-related goodness.
Excellent. And I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a show Twitter account, which is Sentient, and that's Wilfred. And he's at WFD Pod. Mm. And we have a special guest today. It's Dr. Ange. Tell us about yourself, Dr. Ange.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Well, I am a doctor over in the States, and I'm a huge comic book fan and have been pretty much a huge comic book fan over probably close to four decades, maybe just underneath that. And I'm a huge Doom Patrol fan, and I'm a huge Supergirl fan, and so this seemed like the perfect episode for me to be on.
Didn't it just? I think you're the biggest Supergirl fan I've ever met, Ange.
easily.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I strive to get the good word out, but now there seems to be many Supergirl fans all over the place, so I'm pretty happy about that.
These Johnny come latelys.
Yeah, better late than never, I suppose.
This is true.
And you were one of our most vocal fans right from the start. So, you know, when we started this show, you know, you were almost immediately in touch with us about your love of Doom Patrol, which we really appreciated. Mm. So the opportunity came up because Supergirl seems to be a thing right now. there's times where the Supergirl and Doom Patrol met, so we thought we'd cover them today and we'd bring on an expert because Mike and I are not Supergirl experts.
Not really, no.
No, and we fake being experts on Doom Patrol, but possibly a bit of both.
Wow. Yeah.
You guys seem to know your stuff about the Doom Patrol. I mean, you can even talk coherently about the John Byrne stuff. So, I mean, that says a lot.
Well, one of us can because one of us has all the issues. The other one.
And the other of us holds a grudge.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I'm sure John Byrne holds a grudge when he hears our episodes too.
Does he hold a nunt though?
Oh, dear. Anyway, Ange, how has your week in comics and stuff been?
You know, it's been a pretty good week for me. Last night was the second episode of the Supergirl show, which was an improvement over the pilot, which I thought was excellent to begin with, so that's great. From comics point of view, it was actually a pretty slow week. I got Superman, which was another one of these chapters in the angry, depowered storyline, which I'm not particularly enjoying.
Right.
But I also got Justice League 3001, written by Keith Giffen, which I think is a really superior book. J.M. DeMatteis and Howard Porter are also on that, and that's just a really fun book if you're not reading it.
Cool.
I have actually read the first two trades of that, and it is pretty fun. Yeah, and I mean, I've always been a Superman watcher, and it looks like the Superman books are going through what will be looked back on as an interesting phase.
You know, unfortunately, I would say that interesting phase has been about a decade.
Wow.
It's been pretty rough to be a Superman fan.
Oh, dear.
Wow. Paul, how's your week in comics and stuff been?
I haven't really got much to talk about in comics, but I will give everyone a lesson in Aussie pronunciation, or pronunciation, depending on how you pronounce pronunciation.
Right.
Or pronounce pronunciation. Oh, anyway, God. I'm getting distracted. This week, there was a comic coming from Greg Rucka and a lady called, if you listen to most American podcasts, Nicola Scott. And I just wanted to educate, in Australia, we say Nicola.
Mm-hmm.
Nicola like Ducula and Dracula.
Right.
Not Nicola, like I'm having a drink of cola.
Look, everyone says things a little bit differently.
It drives me nuts. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not petty. I focus on the big issues.
Holy jeez. I'm glad you're not holding a grudge about that.
Nicola. Everybody, say it with me. One, two,
Nicola.
Three. Nicola.
Nicola.
Right. Nicola. Excellent. Not Nicola.
Right. You feel better now, Paul? You got that off your chest?
It's a therapy session just for me. You guys can just sit in if you like.
Oh, God. I charge by the minute, you realise.
So that was my week in comics.
Right.
What about you, Mike?
I also had a fairly quiet week. Probably the highlight in terms of comics was the first issue of Black Magic by the aforementioned Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott.
It
was
Nicola. Just, sorry.
Oh, make up your mind. yeah, it was a great first issue. It was tense and interesting and had a bit of nudity in it, which is always welcome.
Actually, I heard it was dudity.
It had both.
Oh, good. Something for everybody.
It had, you know, both sets of genitalia. So, yeah, something for everyone. God, we're really getting off topic here. But, yeah, the rest
all three.
All three? What the hell? Yeah, it was, other than that, I had a fairly quiet week. All-Star Section 8 came out, but I have no idea what's going on in that, and it's the second last issue. It was, yeah, just bizarre, but not great. Batman and Robin Eternal was, it was okay. And I believe the second last issue of Arcadia came out as well. So, thankfully, Black Magic was there to brighten things up in its grayscale way.
With splashes of colour.
Yeah. So, yeah. But other than that, it was an average week. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is that a ticking I hear? Can you hear a ticking, Ange?
I can. Is that a pacemaker?
Oh, I see you have the machine that goes bing.
Actually, I'm pretty sure it's the doom clock. So, looking at the doom clock, unsurprisingly, no real change.
Tell us about the no real change, Mike.
Okay, well, issue 22 of volume 5 was the last Doom Patrol book we had. Cover date of July 2011 and on sale of May 4th of that same year, meaning it's been 4 years and 26 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book.
That's a year. That's 4 year and a half years.
Yeah, yep.
That's incredible.
God, before too long, we'll be at the 5-year anniversary. We'll have to have a very sad party or something.
That's the only type I have.
Oh, dear. Right. On the other hand, it's only been a mere 11 weeks since the team appeared in two different comic books. All-Star Section 8, number 3, with the team making a very quick cameo in the background of a huge meeting of the Justice League-type heroes, and Justice League United, number 12, where they had a one-panel appearance with Stargirl getting Robot Man on side and ready for the JLU's next mission. But this week, in Doom Patrol history, on sale for $3.99 on November 4th of 2009, with the cover date of January 2010, was issue 4 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark one, which was actually the crossover with Blackest Night.
That came with a ring.
Yes. So that was plotted by Giffen, script by DeMatteis, art by Kevin Maguire, letters by Nick J. Napolitano, and colours by Guy Major. And essentially, yeah, we had deceased former members of the team turning up as Black Lanterns and attacking the patrol on Oolong Island. And didn't that go over a treat? And we got to see Arani come and fight Niles.
Dead Arani.
Dead Arani. Still pining for Niles, even from beyond the grave. And there was also a Metal Men backup story where those lovable robots were fighting a team of living mannequins in a department store.
Yeah, chunky comic, that one.
Yeah.
And it came with the Sinestro Core ring, if I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see the sales on that issue, because I bet it eclipses the rest of the series because of the free ring.
Quite possibly, yeah. We can that can be our homework. We can research that after we record.
Yes, yes.
This is Mike's thing. He always says, oh, I'll do some homework in the middle of a podcast. And he never does.
Hey, I have a stack of homework. Okay, I'm working through it, man. Jeez. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
This week on Doom's Planning, it's the nexus, the connection between Supergirl and Doom Patrol. It's timely to talk about Supergirl because it's the latest DC person to get a TV show. And, you know, as it is traditional in Australia, it's on in America but not here. So... which is doubly good that we have Ange here because he has actually seen it, and Mike and I haven't, though I have seen the pilot at least through different means. Anyway, so Ange, how's the show going?
You know, I've been extremely impressed by it. One of the things that I'll say is that, you know, I find Supergirl to be a relatively complex character because she's sort of young in the game and still learning, but she's also got the weight of wearing that S symbol. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think that she is a little bit more fallible than Superman, and that's a large part of her character growth. And so the show seems to really be exploring that in a big way. The pilot, which I think you said you saw, was really rushed. I think they felt they needed to get every single beat of what the season was going to be like in 45 minutes. So, okay. You know, you get everything from the Krypton origin to her hiding to working for Cat Grant to coming out as Supergirl to having her first adventures to losing to a supervillain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. last night, you know, I mean, it really felt rushed. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but... last night's episode was fast-paced, but not rushed in any way. So it really was more of like a villain of the week sort of an approach to the show. Okay. But again, showing that she's still new to this. So it starts out with her kind of screwing up a little bit, people questioning whether or not they want her in the city, and then her sort of rebounding quite nicely. It really seems to mirror the Sterling Gates, Jamal Igel run from sort of the early 2000s, where, I mean, that's almost their opening issue is she stops a supervillain but destroys a baseball park. Everybody seems to hate her. She kind of goes through this crisis of, you know, does she want to be a hero or not? And then kind of, you know, works her way through that. And then their whole arc is about her sort of, you know, moving along that hero's journey. So I've been extremely impressed. I think Melissa Benoist, who plays Supergirl, is just spot on perfect. Because she has this great range from joy to disappointment, to, you know, anger and, you know, fierceness, wanting justice. So I've been overwhelmingly pleased by the whole thing.
That's fantastic.
My thoughts after the pilot was, you know, yeah, I had a few little issues with it, but I thought the show will be fine. You know, I thought, you know, all the characters are likable. There's, you know, it's a good setup. You know, everything's in place for this to be a success, even if some aspects of the pilot were, it seemed just a little bit contrived. But, the effects were fantastic too. Like the plane rescue, spoilers for Mike, was really well done. And
look, being someone who's on Twitter quite a bit, I'm used to spoilers every day.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to avoid anything on Twitter.
Who was the villain in the second ep?
You think that it's Helgramite all along, and she does have sort of a battle with Helgramite, but this is going to be a huge spoiler if you didn't see the pilot, but her aunt, who somehow is now evil, so her mother's sister, comes out to sort of be what essentially is going to be the big bad for the season. So there's actually a confrontation between the two of them. Which is really great. And that's a brand new character. That character is not in the comics at all. So
cool.
I have no knowledge of what's going to happen with this General Astra, her evil aunt who was jailed. So
wow.
Evil Auntie Astra.
Yes, yes.
I can't wait to see it. It sounds really cool. So, cause yeah, I've not even seen the pilot yet. So I'm a little bit behind, but I'll get there. Is it set in the same universe as Flash and Arrow?
You know, there's been a lot of rumors about whether or not that there's going to be a crossover, because everybody who is involved with the production of this show is involved with the production of those shows. So you would think at some point that's going to happen.
Yeah.
She says in the first episode, you know, this is a world that only had one hero, meaning Superman, because he's definitely on this planet. But now there's another Supergirl, right? So they don't mention anybody else. So I don't know whether or not that's going to happen. I can't imagine they would turn down the opportunity for a crossover at some point. But I wonder if they're going to go through this season just to kind of establish the character, and then maybe that'll be something next season.
Okay.
And I'm all hoping for, you know, like, they've already talked about the multiverse in Flash, right? So it would be very easy to sort of have something happen where they end up on each other's Earth, which I think would be perfect, because I love the Flash show, and I think this show is very much in that same sort of vein in terms of its tone.
Yeah, it sounds like they just want to, they're keeping the door open if it's possible and not ruling it out.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good thing to do.
After we got to know you, Ange, and your love of all things Supergirl, and when the show was announced, I was like, dude, you're so lucky. whereas all we've got so far from The Flash is, you know, a very quick poster shot of the Rita Farr story, you know, in The Flash. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I'm freaking out over a tiny 2-second shot.
Anyway. And a crap version of Shrapnel in Arrow. Crapnel.
Crapnel, right.
You know, I say all along, there were many lean years for Supergirl as well, right? She was like dead and forgotten. And then the character they brought back to replace her at the beginning was insane and became a villain. So so maybe I'm due is kind of what I've been telling people.
Yeah. And when the Sterling Gates run came along, you know, that was off the back of a long run of miserable Supergirl stories, wasn't it?
Oh, completely. It just sounds so much like the DCU right now. So they bring her back, right? It's going to be his cousin. And then they decide that really what works for her is that she's angry and hates everybody. And then they work in this bizarre storyline where actually she was sent to Earth to kill Superman. And it's really, really bizarre. And it's drawn like over the top cheesecake. And that just doesn't work for this character. And so they like finally hit rock bottom with that direction. They bring in Sterling Gates. He kind of completely rehabilitates her, and then they cancel the book. And then they bring out the new 52 Supergirl, and she comes down and she's like, I hate Earth. It's a mud ball filled with sweaty people. I'm very angry at everybody. I want to be alone. And then that doesn't work, and she hits rock bottom, and they rehabilitate her with Tony Bedard and Mike Johnson, and then, of course, they cancel the book. So it's almost
the detour is a Red Lantern.
Yes, a detour. Actually, you know, I was very worried about that Red Lantern storyline. It turned out to be a pretty good redemption story where that's like rock bottom, and everybody comes up to her and says, this just isn't you. You need to sort of pull yourself out of this. And she finally says, you know, you're exactly right. I'm better than this. And then she comes, out of it.
And
you know,
he was doing a good job, so, on Red Lanterns.
Yeah. And so, you know, after that storyline, she becomes a true hero, and then they cancel the book 5 issues later. So,
and we're all excited about the new Supergirl book that's coming out. There isn't one.
Welcome to Waiting for Supergirl.
Yeah. What's that ticking I hear?
It's the Kara clock.
Exactly right. I mean, it just seems insane to me that they've got this show on which has just blitzed everything, and there's no book on the shelf, right?
Yeah.
You can imagine that, you know, young girls watching this show or anybody watching the show might say, hey, let me read the comic book to sort of learn more, and there's nothing. So,
especially when the same consideration has been given to Arrow and Flash. You know, and I believe there's even a Flash Season 0 book that's been launched that I believe ties into the show a bit more as well. It's kind of appalling that they haven't got their marketing together and had a book ready.
I think that when you read between the lines, whenever they talk to Dan Didio about this stuff, he's always like, well, she's had her time and we don't want to rush anything and we're waiting for the right book. And it's like, that just sounds like bad business to me. And you're exactly right. They could easily do some sort of digital tie-in book that is tied more into the show if they don't want to reintroduce her to the DCU. But they've just sort of missed that opportunity, right? The solicits for February are already out, right? So we're talking that it can't be before March. And, you know, that's halfway through this season. So,
for shame, DC. For shame.
Yeah. And where's that Doom Patrol book?
Yeah, while we're on the subject.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand their decisions on many things, so.
Yeah. Oh, well. Hopefully one day. Fingers crossed. And toes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys have some Superman family comics in front of you.
Yes, well, let's dive into the first Supergirl meets Doom Patrol story, which appeared in a title called Superman Family, issues 191 to 193, which ran from, well, the cover dates ran from September 78 to February 79. Although the issues themselves went on sale June 20, 78, August 24, 78, and then October 12th, 78. So, and they did a weird thing where they had 2 months listed on the cover as well to sort of, I guess, tide the readers over that it was to do them for September and October for some reason. But then again, the books were 68 pages with no ads and they were a dollar.
Wow. Maybe people would tide themselves over and just read, you know, half the book 1 month and then wait 30 days and then read the other half.
Maybe.
Or maybe that was the practice back then. Back
maybe
in the day.
It was. You know, or they just, yeah, just focus on one story and wait till they've got all of them and do like a trade weight type thing, but with these issues. So Superman Family was an anthology series that ran with that title from 1974 to 1982. The first issue to appear with this title was actually issue number 164, as the series had taken its number from the older series titled Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen, which originally launched in 1954. So what happened with Superman Family is that it would incorporate characters and stories from other books that got cancelled around about that time, specifically Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane, the very first series of Supergirl, and of course the Jimmy Olsen series. So what the book would do is that in each issue, they would publish a new story focusing on one of those three characters, while the other two would be featured in a reprint story. So it was around this time in the mid-70s that DC had another anthology book titled Super Team Family, which was mainly just reprinted stories, and they actually included Doom Patrol issues 86 to 88. Now, these were stories from 1964, including Brotherhood of Evil, The Terrible Secret of Negative Man, Robot Man Fights Alone, where he was on that island fighting a guy setting booby traps for him everywhere. And issue 88 was The Incredible Origin of the Chief, which, conveniently, we covered all of those way back in episode 9. So if you want, go and have a listen to that, and you'll be all caught up. However, Super Team Family started running more original stories just as it got cancelled. And one of those original stories that had been scheduled to appear in that book was this one we're going to discuss, featuring the Doom Patrol. And so it instead got published here in Superman Family. Just a bit of context there for what the book was about. And I've only read this Supergirl and Doom Patrol story in these three issues, but I really want to read the rest of the books now because it looks so much fun. Like, I'm not a big Superman fan, but man, just the art is so old school cool and just looks like lots of fun. And I can't remember the last time I actually wanted to read a Superman book, yet here we are.
You know, those reprint issues for Superman Family were pretty cool because they would have there would be like small different pictures of all of the stories, but the one in the middle would be the new story. So you kind of knew, and they alternated so that you would say like, okay, it's a Supergirl month and a Jimmy Olsen month and a Lois Lane month and a Supergirl month and so on and so forth. So you could actually try to figure out which one was the new story if you wanted to get that. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere, I think around 190 or so, maybe 180, they decided to do this dollar comic format, which was all new. And you're exactly right. These are a lot of fun because, you know, there's always a Supergirl story. There's always a Lois Lane story. There's always a Jimmy Olsen story. But then around that, sometimes it's a Crypto story.
Yes.
Sometimes it's the Fabulous World of Krypton. Sometimes it's Nightwing and Flamebird and Kandor. Sometimes it's Superboy. And so you really got the breadth of this whole universe when you pick this up. It was a buck. I mean, back then, that was, you know, that wasn't chump change. But you got 68 pages. And you're exactly right. When you look through this run, like, there are some Marshall Rogers Fabulous World of Krypton stories that are really fantastic. But the rest of it, if you read it now, can be quite campy. You know, they have the private life of Clark Kent, where he thinks that a minor bird has overheard him talking in his sleep and is now saying Clark Kent is Superman. And, you know, there's the there's the adventures of Mr. and Mrs. Superman on Earth 2, where they're married. And, you know, he has to find her because he knows the way her perfume and her perspiration mix so that he can zone in on her scent. And wow. It's really a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah, well, flicking through, you know, seeing Crypto sort of hanging out with this street tough guy, you know, who seems to be big on guns for some reason. And, you know, you get to see all of Crypto's thoughts as he's, you know, tormented about helping people on the mean streets. It's like, what the hell? Deary me. So anyway, well, we'll get into this story. So issue 191, the first chapter of this three-parter is titled Matter of Gravity. And we get to see that Supergirl is, you know, flying around her town. And when she gets back to her home and she changes into Linda Danvers, which I wasn't aware she actually had that as a secret identity. That's how little I know about Supergirl. And she's watching TV and she sees a news report that an old friend of hers by the name of Rudy Clement has apparently blown up his home through some bizarre experiment. And when she goes to check on him, he's kind of gone mad, an instant villain. He's declared himself the Gravitronic Man, and he's using the powers of gravity to attack her. And as he's doing this, he's you know, complaining about someone called Tane. And he's going to go and get this Tane guy and give him what for. So he's using his gravitic powers to basically disrupt Supergirl and cause havoc with her flying ability. And he basically starts disrupting gravity so that everything around them is getting forced up into the air, and just anything that's not tied down starts floating upwards, and that includes traffic, people, animals, anything and everything. While all that's going on, we cut away to England and we see the Doom Patrol on vacation there. It's not explained why they chose England, but it's the classic Kupperberg team, because this takes place only a year after the Showcase Presents storyline, which we covered back in episode 11, back in March. So, Showcase Presents issues 94 to 96 is when Kupperberg tried to reintroduce them. And so it's that classic team of Robot Man with kind of the bendy limbs, and Val Vostok is not quite, you know, she's not all covered in bandages yet, and
still hot.
which and it's quite obvious in this that Joshua is still pining over her as well. And guess what Arani does in one of her first panel appearances in this story?
Talks about finding the chief.
Yep. Because, you know, they're wandering through this park in London, and she says, you know, she's talking about feelings, and she says, I see people in love, and I remember my own love, Niles Calder, the man who helped me make me what I am. And yet, is not life full of pain? Can it be any other way? It's like, Jesus, Arani, come on. It's like, you know, she gets a couple of panels to herself, and that's what she does. So anyway, as the patrol are, you know, vacationing, a building explodes right near them, and they kind of do this whole very heroic, very almost kind of campy leaping into action scene. Literally, Cliff is throwing his jacket off him, saying, Doom Patrol, it's time for action. And Arani says, say it, my friend. And Josh says, Mister, them's just the words I wanted to hear. It's like, wow.
This sounds a bit rehearsed, that.
A little bit.
They were workshopping that in their headquarters.
Maybe, yeah. And you know, let's wait till we're on vacation to give them the good old college try. So anyway, the building's exploded. There's chaos everywhere. Of course, the team does the right thing and they save the people, you know, that are about to get damaged by this building. But what they soon uncover is that there's a man sort of wearing this metallic suit inside the building. And they figure, he looks suspicious. He's probably the one that caused the explosion. So they give chase. The guy gets trapped in a dead end. And he turns around and it's assumed that he's meant to be British, because he starts complaining about these rotten Americans. These damned Americans. Just like that cursed colonial upstart, Rudy Clement. Hang on, that's Supergirl's friend who just had an explosion and went evil as well. So there's something weird going on. This guy then activates a gravitronic ray as well, and he starts making it so that Cliff and Josh and the rest of the team are getting crushed against the ground. So that's how the story starts. You've got these two weird gravity-powered guys in different countries kind of causing all sorts of havoc.
Golly.
Yeah. We know the second guy's British because he says bloody a lot. I bloody well won't, you damned Americans, right? So it's pretty classic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool and weird and I just love that it's, you know, it's very of its time, I think the story is. So
just want to bloody point out that Aussies say bloody a lot too.
Yeah, well, they're not in Australia though. It's quite clear they're in London.
No, they don't say cobber.
No.
Core
blimey. So we jump ahead to issue 192. The title of this chapter is What Goes Up Can't Come Down. And the majority of this story is spent with Supergirl trying to save everyone floating up into the atmosphere, thanks to Graviton Man getting rid of the gravity in the city, basically. And so she's spending a lot of the time flying around, using her super breath to minimize the damage as a truck and a bus collide with each other, and, you know, rescuing some slightly ungrateful kids. And we see this kind of weird, almost like a giant energized cell entity, kind of narrating what's going on, but kind of implying that he's the cause behind these two separate people thinking up ways to get gravity-based powers. Now, Ange, does this bizarre creature appear anywhere after this story?
Oh, it actually works its way through a long run of Superman Family, believe it or not. And it's one of the things that I like about this is that this was a lot of people just ignored Supergirl's history, right? She'd been around since 1959, but this blob ends up becoming a disembodied spirit of Lesla Lar, a Supergirl villain from like 1962.
Wow.
Who, yeah, back then actually had like a 4 or 5 issue storyline. This was back when she was the backup in Action, where she was a girl scientist on Kandor, hated Supergirl, decided to replace Supergirl because she looked a lot like her. Shrunk Supergirl, put her in Kandor, brainwashed her, went out on Earth, replaced her. And then as part of that storyline, she says, you know, the next best thing for me to do is to get all of the Phantom Zone villains out here to join me so that we can rule the Earth. And they come out and vaporize her, which so they pull out like a gun and just like atomize her. And so here's Jerry Conway writing this. And throughout Superman Family, this blob ends up like at one point it takes over a Superboy robot. And at another point, it convinces a guy out in space he needs to come to Earth to attack her. And it all leads up to an eventual fight between Supergirl and her. But it was a pretty good callback to one of the few villains that had some sort of longstanding history with Supergirl.
That sounds like Supergirl season 2 to me.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay, see. Now I'm much happier knowing that. See, that's a spoiler I can deal with, knowing that this bizarre disembodied blob thing, which is, kind of monologuing its way through the action in this story and going, wah-ha-ha. That makes it a lot clearer as to what's going on.
Would you say Lesla Lar?
Lesla Lar. That's correct. Lesla, L-E-S-L-A. A classic double L Superman name.
Right. So, you know, unbeknown to Supergirl, this blob is actually the cause of all the chaos that's going on, and sort of giving both Tane and Clement the idea to use these gravity-based powers. And it turns out that this has been a long brewing feud, like back to colonial times. Because it turns out there was an English lord named Tane who disowned his son for his American sympathies during the Revolution. So the son goes to America, changes his name to Clement, and becomes father to a line of multi-millionaires. Meanwhile, back in Britain, the Tane family, you know, go through some horrible stuff, and, you know, they have to sell off all their land and their property. And, you know, they're basically the family is ruined.
Tane's in pain, sorry.
Correct.
Tane is in pain. And so, it just so turns out that The modern day descendants of these family lines now both have gravity based powers and are now out to kill each other with them.
Wow.
For me, it's a little bit insane because here are these two guys. You know you're never going to hear of these guys again. They get 3 pages of backstory of origin going back yes. to the 1700s. It's like, really? Did we need that much? And some of it, you know, this guy is just monologuing as he explains his family history, right? This is all in quotes. He's talking to himself.
Yeah.
And some of it's pretty cheesy, right? He drowned both his sorrows and himself in the fiery depths of demon rum. And then show him just guzzling right out of the bottle.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of silly in its own way. But and then, of course, they both, you know, decide to work on anti-gravity particles. So,
wow. Kind
of coincidence, I suppose.
And yet, no Who's Who page, no Secret Origins issue.
No. Nothing like that at all. So, as you said, Ange, yeah, they're both simultaneously developed anti-gravity devices. So then they start attacking each other. The gravitic force from each of them is most likely going to destroy the Earth.
Good so, use of gravitic, Mike. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. There you, I try. So that chapter ends with Supergirl rushing off to find both these villains. And as she finds them over in the middle of the ocean, they say, hey, you know what? Let's combine our powers and fight Supergirl. Of course.
Cool.
What kind of bugged me is that she doesn't actually meet the patrol until this last chapter from issue 193, which is titled The Gravity War. And the majority of that is spent, again, with both villains, you know, saying which one of them is the better one and the smarter one. And they're using their powers to knock the hell out of Supergirl. At one point, the gravity powers are used to lift up a gigantic shark out of the ocean. And, of course, Supergirl punches it out of the way.
Yeah, these guys aren't the brightest guys. And one of them, you know, the page before, he brings the Titanic up from the bottom of the ocean and throws the Titanic at her. So
yeah.
It's rather silly.
It's a bit, yeah, just a bit silly, yeah. So, meanwhile, back in London, the patrol have kind of, you know, cottoned on that the world's in peril yet again. And just kind of by sheer luck, as they're sort of, you know, searching through the ruins of the building that exploded before, they find Tane's diary. And for some, it's like an actual diary book. And for, I'm guessing for whatever reason, he wrote down all of his evil plans in that. And they figure out how they can disrupt his powers and his gravity-based suit, because they realize that his secret lab is in Big Ben.
Of course.
Of course.
Why not?
Yeah, and Paul, I will show you a picture of this panel, but you know, this secret lab in Big Ben has a gigantic monitor in it. And I know you love your
awesome.
Your old school monitors. Unfortunately, it's showing Supergirl getting blasted by gravity powers. So Cliff gives the order. He wants Val and Joshua to fly off to help Supergirl take on these villains. Meanwhile, he's going to stay back with Arani, and he's going to use his computer powered brain to figure out, you know, what he can do to shut down Tane's suit. It basically, you know, ends up with that being the only time Supergirl, you know, first meets the team, when she's fighting with Josh and Val over the middle of the ocean and taking on these two gravity-based weirdos. So, of course, they save the day. Gravity is restored to normal and people start, you know, getting helped back down to Earth. And Supergirl basically says, so long, Doom Patrol. See you in the States, where I'll be taking a well-deserved rest. She doesn't actually thank the team for helping her.
She said goodbye.
She didn't do a Rhea. She didn't just, you know, take off, you know, not acknowledge them. And then, yeah, the last thing we see is of this little blob, which we now know turns out to be Leslie La. And this blob is saying, you know, don't count on your rest, Supergirl. The terror has just begun. That's why I asked if we see it later on, because you can't just leave it like that. So
no, exactly.
Yeah. So overall, Ange, what do you think of this story?
I think it's the world's worst team-up because they only meet each other for like 2 pages. It's a little bit hysterical in its insanity. It's definitely part of the time because you think that, you know, in the earlier chapters, Supergirl is like, all of Florida is floating into space. And in one panel, she says, okay, I've tied everybody down. Now I can move on. And you're like,
Really?
Oh, wow, you know, that's really fast. And I guess the Justice League doesn't care that Florida is floating away. But okay, no. I'm just going to say that Supergirl is taking care of this on its own. as both a Supergirl fan and a Doom Patrol fan, you know, I was pretty pleased to see them interact even in the small way.
Yeah, yeah. I have never actually read this story before coming across these issues. I read the one that Paul's about to take us through from Daring New Adventures of Supergirl. But part of the excitement for me was, yeah, seeing this story for the first time, a brand new story featuring the Doom Patrol that I hadn't read, because surprise, surprise, there's maybe like a handful of stories featuring them that I haven't read. And this was one of them. So, you're right, though. It's a bit silly. And they don't actually have a lot of screen time together, which is a bit of a shame. And the villains get so much more screen time. And I don't think we've ever seen or heard from them ever again. They basically get handed over to... Oh, you get to see some London police bobbies. In the background as they get taken away, but that looks like they're nude when they get taken away by the cops, which is...
Yeah, I noticed that as well. I guess they just tore their powered costumes off them and they're paraded out of their underwear, so...
Yeah, yeah, a little bit odd.
That is traditionally what happens in England. It's just a cultural affectation.
Mm, yes. But overall, yeah, I think it was an okay story. I think it was... Very much, yeah, of its time. It was a bit of silly fun, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was cool.
What's the art like?
I enjoyed it. It's pretty good in some bits. Some pages actually reminded me of Lytle stuff. That kind of more realistic look in some areas. So,
who's the art team on it?
The art team is... Actually, I'll go through the whole credits. So, the... story was written by Jerry Conway, with additional scripting by Scott Edelman on issue 193. The pencils were by Arvel M. Jones, with inks by Romeo Tanghall. Now, I haven't heard of Arvel Jones before this, actually, but I think they did a great job. I was, you know, quite happy with the way it looked. There's some cool splash pages in there when the two villains are, you know, blasting each other with gravity powers, and yeah, there's some good stuff there. In issue 191, the letters were by Shelley Lefferman, but Mike Stevens did them in the last two issues. Colors in 191 were done by Gene D'Angelo, and Jerry Serpe, I think it's pronounced, did them in 192 and 193. For the covers, Dick Giordano did all the inks. The pencils for 191 were by Rich F. Buckler, and Ross Andrew did the last two covers. And the editor for all three parts was E. Nelson Bridwell.
Ooh, that's a distinguished DC person.
Yeah, he was known for his really encyclopedic knowledge of all of the Superman history. In fact, they used to say back then, if they ever had a question about something, they would ask him, like, when was the last time Blue Kryptonite showed up? And he would be able to tell them. So cool. I'm not surprised that this whole storyline with, like, bringing back this little-known villain from the early 60s, that he had his hand in it.
Mm. Wow. On the inside cover of 193, there's actually a cool piece of art there showing E. Nelson Bridwell sitting at the head of the table, and he's actually talking to the characters about, you know, what have you done for me for this issue? And that's like the contents page, as they're all like Supergirl saying, "I, Supergirl, have the final chapter of my team up with the Doom Patrol, the Gravity War, page 35. And yeah, he looks like a nice dude. So yeah, it's I was quite happy with it. It was very cool. A little bit cheesy and over the top, especially when the Doom Patrol literally launch into action. And but I really enjoyed it. It was good fun.
Awesome. This would do really well if they did a Showcase Presents Volume 3 of the Doom Patrol. They could open it with you know, the Showcase 94, 95, 96 issues, and then put in these ones, and then the next two that I'm about to talk to you guys, from Daring New Adventures of Supergirl. So we've got number 8 and number 9. So about 5 years later.
Five years
later, yeah. So we're not talking about the Legion 5 years later, we're talking about Supergirl 5 years later. So this was Daring New Adventures of Supergirl, cover dated June 1983, issue 8, and it went on sale on March 17, 1983, so that's a little bit before my birthday. Yeah, I won't tell you how old I was. Anyway, And it covered a price of 60 cents, which is a very respectable price for a comic, I would say.
Mm.
Yeah. Edited by Julia Swartz, another fantastic DC name with a lot of pedigree.
Mm.
And it was written by Paul Kupperberg again. And the inker was Carmen Infantino, so the famous Flash artist. And the inker was Robert Ochsner. And the letterer was Ben Oda. What's that Oda? It's the letterer. And the colorist, I'm sorry, can't help myself, was Thomas J. Zucco. And it's got an awesome Gil Kane cover, which shows a great big image of Supergirl in the background while the Doom Patrol are fighting the foe who's introduced on the cover as Reactron.
Oh, no.
What a great name. Not Respontron, Reactron. Anyway, so let's get into it. So this comic basically starts with the Doom Patrol looking at a giant monitor. And it, on the monitor, they can see that Val Vostok, Negative Woman, in her both forms at once, getting zapped. And Cliff said, "That's it, troops, what we've been waiting for." And Josh says, "Then let's not just sit here like we're watching reruns of Star Trek. Let's move it." And so the next page, we see they are in a van. So we could call this the Doom Van era, or right, the Van Patrol. Anyway, so it is, again, the classic lineup. So we've got Robot Man, we've got Arani as Celsius, and we've got Joshua Clay as Tempest, and they are leaping into action. So this story starts with a bang. So it's sort of, it's like it's part two, but it there is no part two, part one for this, is there, Ange?
No, basically the issue before this, the last page is just a repeat of the first page of this one. Linda Danvers just happens to be out in a park, and she sees Negative Woman release herself. So,
So the Doom Patrol are fighting a villain. Val falls to the ground, and her negative energy comes out. And Linda Danvers is leaning over, wondering what the deal is. And Josh turns up and starts being very patronizing to her, and say that she should run away, like a good citizen.
Oh dear.
Yeah, anyway. And then we see that they are fighting Reactron, the living reactor, who is floating up in the sky. And we've got to give it to Reactron for this outfit, haven't we? He is basically a Star Spangled and yellow. And yeah, he has these great big sort of red control bands wrapped around him. Yeah, I'm really hoping we see this outfit exactly in the Supergirl TV show. Because the word is out that Reactron will appear in the show. Isn't that right, Ange?
He absolutely will. But yeah, I don't think he'll look like this professional wrestler that we're seeing in this issue.
Yeah. So it looks like his skin is yellow.
Yeah, I agree with you. It looks like he's in this purple, star-spangled onesie. With yellow skin.
It's very dignified. But he's hovering in the sky and he can blast them. And so, Linda runs away because she wants to turn into Supergirl. And she gets grabbed by some dude called Daryl, who's a mate of hers. And, so that's the end of trying to be Supergirl in this situation, because she can't turn into Supergirl in front of Daryl. Bloody Daryl. Anyway, so it's up to the Doom Patrol to fight with Reactron. And they've obviously got history with Reactron, because he knows about their powers, and he knows Joshua. And he said, "I knew you wouldn't be far behind if the Negative Broad was around, Joshua Clay." So it's on. Negative Woman in her negative energy flies through him, and that disrupts him for a minute. But it also disrupts her a bit, so she starts falling to the ground and returns to her body, where Cliff is tending to her. And then Arani does twin blasts of fire and ice, not fire and water, fire and ice, that freezes him, but also the heat negates his radiation powers. I got no idea how that works, how you freeze someone and use heat at the same time.
Comic book science.
Yes, comic book science.
Thanks, boys. Anyway, so Reactron falls to the ground in a block of ice, where Cliff clobbers him and he hits into a tree. And then the team are surrounding him, and then Cliff goes in for some wrestling grapples, and Reactron does a very good getting his arms around, and he puts them on Cliff's head and then starts to heat up Cliff's head. And Cliff's just boasting about how he can't, his metal body's impervious, but he's not so sure once his brain starts to cook.
Yeah, that'd be a cause for concern, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Linda Danvers is driving away from the battle in a car with her friends. But she's using her X-ray vision, super vision, telescopic vision, whatever type of vision it is, to see what's going on. And we see that Negative Woman blasts Reactron with a power that I've never seen before. And that makes him release Robot Man. And then Reactron does some sort of glow thing that makes him phase out and into a concentrated stream of particles and some sort of warp, leaving the Doom Patrol with no one to fight. And then we get, I don't know if I should go into this, there's a few pages of ongoing Supergirl stuff, isn't there, with shenanigans around the university.
So yeah.
So we'll leave that stuff out. Or yeah, do you want to talk about that at all, Ange?
I leave it up to you. I can talk about her storied history of many, many different careers, or we can just skip it. Let's skip it.
We'll skip it.
Yeah.
A few pages later, there's the Doom Patrol's van, which is a really nice grey van, is parked in a municipal garage beneath Michigan Avenue. That's very, if you wanted to go there, I guess you could, and you could relive that parking lot. And they're all sitting in the back of the van while Josh has been out and he's been looking for Reactron. So I just love they're all sitting in a van waiting. It's fantastic. It's not as good as their old headquarters, let's face it. Anyway, there's a bit of inter-team bickering. There's a bit of, you know, the politics of who loves who, etc. going on. Oh, so Josh likes Val. That's never been mentioned before.
Oh, dear.
She's not coping because she's recently become the bandage version of Val, which was in that, was it DC Comics Presents?
Correct.
Correct. Thanks, Ange.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. We get a good look at Cliff's look in this, and he looks a little bit like a traditional Spanish soldier, doesn't he? He's got the sort of helmet with a rim, and he's got sort of wide shoulder pads. It's quite, it's an odd look. He does look a bit Spanish, I thought.
Okay.
Anyway, then we get some Supergirl romance stuff. Sorry, I might be selling this short. Then eventually we get to beneath the LSU Fletcher Hall. There's a security guard walking around and he sees a glow and he walks in on Reactron. And Reactron very meanly kills him with his radiation powers. And then he's about to do something with the, in the hall when Supergirl bursts in and it's a fight between the two. And that ends that story. Hmm. So all in all, I think this is pretty cool. I think the art is seems very classic. Like some panels in this, I was showing them to my wife. They look like sort of classic romance comics panels. You know, the girls' faces, all the lipstick and the hair, and you know, it's really interesting stuff. What do you think of it, Ange?
So I would say this might be the second worst team up comic. to the first, because they don't team up. But a couple of things that I thought. So first, you're exactly right. This is later in Carmen Infantino's art career, but the inking is by Bob Ochsner, who was very famous for how he drew women as being very, very lovely, and he was all in romance comics. So you can definitely see that his inks on Infantino have a different feel than other people inking him. So I completely agree with you on the art. I'm not the hugest fan of Infantino in this part of his career, but Ochsner really puts a nice polish on it. I think that after listening to you guys, I think that the government should start tracking who buys large monitors. because you're either a bad guy or a good guy, and you can at least probably weed through some people. And I also thought some of this is a little contrived. Like one of the pages is two guys at the college talking, and one of them says, if people found out that we'd put an experimental nuclear reactor on a college campus in the middle of one of the densest population centers in the country, there'd be hell to pay. And then they're like, yep, ha, ha, ha. You know, it's like, no, I don't know if we could get away with that, but I suppose if you want to. the last thing I'll say is the end page is really great because this is like really a confident Supergirl who busts in on Reactron and and says, you know, the name's Supergirl Golden Boy. And he goes, you're about to be made awful sorry. And she goes, go ahead and scare me some more. Like, she's not taking any part of it. So this is a this is a more mature Supergirl ready to throw down.
And she's doing a very powerful swoop at him in the very last panel.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting that she just decided to stay in the taxi, right? Like, Clark has figured out ways to disappear for decades, right? And she's like, oh, I'll let this brawl happen in the middle of my city. I hope nothing comes of it.
Yeah. But, I mean, definitely there is a – I think the artist was more interested in inking the pages with the girls in it than the battle.
I completely agree. And it's very – the fashion is so late 70s, early 80s. It's really a wonderful time capsule of frilly shirts and puffy sleeves and all that stuff.
Yeah. And there's a backup about Lois Lane. Is that a reprint? Do you?
No. This was all. These were all new stories, and Oxnard drew those as well. So there's sort of a nice feel of continuity between those stories for the most part.
Right. So, Ange, can you school a couple of ignorant colonials on what the deal is with Linda Danvers? Hair color is different.
Yeah. So you know, back in the first appearance. Superman's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I have a family member who survived Krypton. Let me put you in an orphanage and forget about you, right? So, which is terrible. And she, at that point, adopted a brown wig with braided pigtails as a way to keep a secret identity, even though he told her that she shouldn't use her superpowers. So she was a brunette, and she'd pull her wig off when she decided to be Superman.
Right.
And then, of course, as she sort of ages a little bit in the comics, you can't have braided pigtails in college. So she switches to a different wig and sort of remains that way until at some point, actually, in this series, Pupperberg gives her some comic book science, a Kandorian comb that when she combs her hair one way, as she goes from brunette to blonde, and when she combs her hair the other way, she goes from blonde to brunette. So the wig becomes a non-issue. And when she combs it one way and it's brown, it's straight hair. And when she combs it the other way and it's blonde, it's very kind of poofy, curly, almost the way, you know, like she appears in The Crisis.
Wow.
Yes. And then from the Danvers point of view, she was adopted by the Danvers in the Action Comic series kind of within the first several years to get her out of the orphanage and becomes Linda Lee Danvers. And her parents, Fred and Edna, sort of follow her throughout her stories from then on.
Right. Okay. Now, the Peter David Supergirl, was that also Linda Danvers?
That is correct. So Peter David is a huge Supergirl fan, and he was dealing with the Matrix Supergirl, the protoplasm creature from the Pocket Universe.
I know that one well.
Yes. And so what he had happen was in the first issue of his story, she, Matrix, merges with a human girl whose name is Linda Danvers. And when those two merge, they kind of become something more than just their separate parts. And it ends up becoming a more religious story, but she is Linda Danvers in that. That's the name. David was a huge fan, as I said, so he injected a lot of old Supergirl stuff into his story. So there are a lot of nods. So she lived in Leesburg because of Linda Lee. Her boyfriend was Dick Malvern. That was her boyfriend in the 50s and 60s. She met a super horse named Comet. There was all sorts of things like that sort of working their way through that really were nice homages to the original Supergirl, even at one point meeting a guardian angel that calls herself Kara and helps her defeat the big bad of the first sort of major arc.
Yeah, and there was a crossover with Resurrection Man, if I remember correctly.
There was a crossover with Resurrection Man that I covered at some point, which was very cool.
Cool. Okay. All right. Shall we move on to the next issue, which is issue 9 of the Daring New Adventures of Supergirl? Let's do it. Now, this one has an even better cover by Gil Kane. The Doom Patrol look very like they do in the mid-80s rather than the 70s. So, yeah. And He even makes the Reactron costume look pretty cool. By surrounding it with sort of pink energy.
Sure. Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah. We'll call it cool.
So we open with a splash page of Supergirl fighting Reactron, and there's word balloons and bubbles all over it to tell you what's going on. And it says, guest starring the new Doom Patrol. And you go, cool. And get to the next page, still no Doom Patrol. So there's lots of fighting and talking and fighting and talking. And Reactron starts to kick her butt with his radioactive powers. And, she was being fairly, I've got this, but pretty much she has to start running away. And he follows her because she's trying to lure him out. But when you get into a fight in a reactor, what happens? You sometimes damage it and it starts to go critical. So we see that has happened as the reactor on and Supergirl have now left the scene, but the nuclear reactor is overreacting, as it were. Anyway, then we find the Doom Patrol. Where are they? They're in the van. good to know. So, they're driving around looking for trouble. It's good to see vans, you know. It's the tradition of Scooby-Doo and the A-Team, isn't it? So that people get around in vans.
Except you want them to eventually get out of the van and do something.
Yeah.
And it's tiny. Like, it's not like an RV. Like,
no, it's not a big van.
Yeah.
It does look really solid, though, doesn't it?
It looks more like an armored car to me, but I suppose van, either one works.
Yeah. And they're all bored, so Val is going to fly out as Negative Woman. And Joshua naturally says, hey, wait for me, Val, honey. Arani shares that she's worried that they won't be able to handle Reactron alone. And Cliff said, relax, we'll get there as well. Anyway, Supergirl is being chased by Reactron through the sky, and he zaps her. Then she goes under a bridge. So they're tussling the sky when Josh and Val show up and they start fighting Reactron, and Supergirl runs away to get a great big lead pipe or lead piece of pipe, a section of pipe. And yeah, there's certainly something personal between Reactron and Joshua. Supergirl swoops in with this bit of lead pipe and puts it around Reactron, and Josh is going, Supergirl, no, don't do that. And she melts it, and then he says, you should have listened to me. He's going to explode if you do that. So, oops. So Supergirl says, great Krypton, as she often exclaims, and flies him up into the air, and then he explodes, and she sort of gets wiped out by the explosion, but Negative Woman rescues her, and they all gather on the grass for a bit of flashbacking. So Josh explains the history between him and Reactron, and he says, Reactron's real name is Sergeant Ben Krullin, and they were in Vietnam together, and he was like a meathead bastard, you know, redneck,
a jerk, maybe.
Yeah. So he comes across a village and filled with women and kids, and decides it's the Viet Cong base, and decides to kill them all. And Joshua is so incensed by this that he feels energy exploding in his hands, and he blasts Krullin. And then Krullin turns around and starts shooting at him, but Krullin's actually glowing at this point. And then Joshua melted his gun and then ran into the jungle and made his way back to the USA as a deserter. And that's how Arani found him. Ah. So Krullin was the straw that broke Joshua's camel's back powers.
He was the tipping point for Josh. Yeah.
Get me out of this metaphor. Help.
Yes. Forget the camel and the straw and that. Yeah. I'd forgotten that was Josh's origin story, essentially. But I'd forgotten. Do you think it was Josh's power manifesting at that point that actually turned Krullin into Reactron?
Well, they put in a little bit of caveat that Krullin was also at some A-bomb tests in the 50s. Oh. So, you know, he's been around radiation a lot, so naturally got powers rather than cancer.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Of course.
Anyway, yes. So, they actually interact with Supergirl on the next page, and they all talk about what they can do. But Supergirl has realized that she may have inadvertently caused a nuclear meltdown, so she's going to fly off and take care of that. and she leaves the Doom Patrol behind. She flies into the reactor, and she's about to shut it all down in the heart of the reactor, but she finds Reactron has parked himself in there and is absorbing all the energy.
Cool.
Oh, which is probably a good thing in a in a meltdown. Anyway, so she grabs him and starts flying him up into the sky, and he blasts her because he's got so much radiation going on now that he's super powerful. But then she starts flying around him at super speed, which is the best way to fly around someone. And that starts a vortex that propels him up in the upper atmosphere, and it also compresses all the radiation around him, so it's super concentrated, and he explodes up in space, it looks like. And she falls down to Earth, and the Doom Patrol gather around her, and she's unconscious. And we're promised that the next issue is about a sick Supergirl versus Matrix Prime, and it's called Radiation Fever.
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun. So that's the end of the team-up. Now, it strikes me that these comics remind me very much of sort of newspaper comic strips, you know, sort of like it just flows from one adventure to the next. You know, there's never really an end point.
Mm.
And so the Doom Patrol sort of come and go from Supergirl's story rather than saying this is the end of the story. Yeah. What do you guys think? Yeah.
Well, I'll say there were no trade paperbacks back then, right? So they didn't try to sort of put a story together that had a nice beginning and ending. It sort of flowed from one issue to the next. And there, it is odd that they kind of come and go with almost no, you know, hey, it was great meeting you, you know, let me shake your hand. A more classic sort of superhero moment that I would expect in this time.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell whether the Doom Patrol are doing Supergirl's book a favor or Supergirl's doing the Doom Patrol a favor. I guess Paul Kupperberg really wanted to write the Doom Patrol some more, so you know this was he was on this book regularly, so it was a good place to slot them in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the origin of Tempest is so well thought out. I wonder if he was hoping that the showcase run would lead to a book where he could explore it there. And then he's sitting on an idea and, oh, I've got this book. I may as well do it. So I wonder if that's maybe what he was thinking.
And he got to bring Reactron back in the Volume 2 Doom Patrol series.
Yeah, Reactron's been sort of a... he's been a Supergirl villain since, you know? Reappeared in the Gates run. So
yeah, with a cool new look.
Yes, much more streamlined and much more metallo-like might be what I would describe it as.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
I'm trying to remember from this story in Daring New Adventures of Supergirl, was there any sort of familiarity when they did run into each other again in Fighting Reactron?
In the first issue, she says something like, oh, I recognize these guys from my last adventure with them. And it says, you know, see Superman Family 191.
Okay, there we go.
I forget where exactly it is.
So long as there was some sort of continuity there, that makes me happy. That's all I care about. Because it would have been weirder if they just blatantly disregarded it completely.
Yeah. But,
yeah, but there's obviously some untold story of the Doom Patrol fighting Reactron before this, so it's alluded to, but never actually told.
Look, maybe we'll get to it one day. Maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, that will be a flashback issue in number 7 after the first trade gets released of the future book.
And they'll have Supergirl come and help them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that'll launch her book as well. And look, DC, call us. Us three guys, we've got it all sorted out.
Yeah. So as we said, Reactron's going to be in the Supergirl show, and he's played by Chris Browning, who you may know from Terminator Salvation and Cowboys and Aliens and things like that. 310 to Yuma. He's a bit of a cowboy-looking dude, isn't he?
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a nice rough look to him, which I think probably works well with his character, who always kind of comes across as a crass son of a gun.
Wow. Well, I hope someone photoshops him in yellow and puts on the stars and the purple thing.
Wow, if I had any Photoshop skills, I would add that to my homework pile, but no.
Anything else before we wrap up Supergirl talk, Ange?
Just a couple more points on this issue. There's a lot of comic book science, right? Like, oh, he's got radiation powers. I'll put lead over him. Oh, not that radiation. That's going to make him a giant bomb. So you just have to sort of flow with it. But I do like the fact that early on as they're fighting, she's like, maybe it's not the best place for us to fight the closed quarters of a reactor's control room. So she at least does the right thing and tries to sort of bring the fight outside. But I really enjoyed this. Again, you know, I read the showcase issues off of the spinner rack. So,
oh, wow.
This was my Doom Patrol before I discovered the older stuff or the later stuff. So I was happy to see them again.
Cool,
awesome. I wish I was there right at the start.
Oh, it's funny. That was back in the day, like truly spin the rack. So there was I found the first issue. I actually looked for the first issue because I saw an ad for it in the books. Hey, Showcase is coming back and this is going to be the first cover. And I was like, wow, Doom Patrol is such a cool name. And like, who are these people? And then I got the second issue because I actually, you know, back then you just go to the store and spin the rack. I had no idea about release dates or anything like that. And then I never got the second issue. I got the third issue with the Cossack. And I was like, what's going on in the middle? I finally found that second issue, you know, whatever, decades later. So to finally sort of finish that run.
Okay. Shall we call it, Dr. Anne? Shall we say
Doom Planning's
done? All right. What time are we calling it?
What?
Making a medical joke, but it's falling really flat.
I see.
Right.
I see.
Okay.
I gotcha. We can't resuscitate this story any longer unless anybody has other ideas.
James said it was hilarious in the background.
Right. Let's move on to the mailbag of doom, shall we?
That would be Sounds a good great. Thing right now.
Yes. Awkward segue.
This week on the Mailbag of Doom, we are asking everybody, what character or characters would you like to see graduate to have their own ongoing? And we got a pitiful handful of answers, not very many, which is good sometimes. Sometimes you don't want to wade through lots of answers, do you?
Yeah.
Anyway, we first heard from Jeffrey Brown, who's at Chizigo, I'd say, perhaps. And he said, I would say Robot Man and Crazy Jane. Well, they could share a book and go on wild, surreal adventures, a road trip across the DCU. I would buy that. I would read that.
I would read that too.
Me as well.
That would be lots of fun.
What a shock the three Doom Patrol fans would buy that book.
Look, I'm sure Jim Lee and Dan DiDio are listening and they're taking notes. I'm sure of it.
Awesome.
We heard from Rift at Rift1821, and he said, solo Supergirl book. And since Doom Patrol have appeared in some books recently, they need to break off and have the whole Patrol book. And then he wrote in it again, and he said, okay, listen to the ep, and my first answers aren't eligible. Fine. So a Beast or a Laughley's book. But Crazy Jane would be awesome as well. Laughley's had his own book.
Yeah, James doesn't know that. It's okay. James is mostly introduced into comics from me doing a Doom Patrol podcast in his house. So.
Right. Okay. I wonder if I should... Oh, look, he'll hear the episode. He'll find out about the Laughley's book. I'll leave it up to him whether he reads it or not. I wouldn't.
He could read it if he wants, but he shouldn't.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, we heard from Jess Camacho, who's at Camacho Jess, by weird coincidence. And she said, Quentin Quire and Evan, if they still exist after Secret Wars. Now, Quentin Quire, I know from the X-Men. Who's Evan? Anyone know?
I would assume from that same storyline with Quentin and part of the X books. Because, yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't know. I only know Quentin from the Morrison stuff.
So. Yeah, new X-Men. That's where I know him. Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, Evan, definitely.
Yeah, good old Evan. Yep.
Uncanny Evan.
We heard from Astrakus One, who this week has changed his handle to Trickle the Vein More. And Kevin said, Elongated Man, the pre-New 52 one.
Yes, a million times yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, 1,000 times. All right, I'll back it off a bit. I love Elongated Man. So good.
They should do it like a detective book with his wife, where they're solving mysteries. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
With non-dead Sue.
Exactly.
Okay, we heard from Moby-1, who's at Moby-1, and he said, Mirror Master and Wile E. Coyote both deserve their time in the solo spotlight. I reckon a Mirror Master series would be awesome. He could be like an anti-hero or, just a plain villain, but his adventures would be so weird because of, mirror worlds and dimensions and things like that. I'd like that. Yeah.
Sounds cool. Yeah.
Totes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we do have a letter from Ange. Do we want to read that? Or, Ange, would you just like to talk to us?
I'll tell you what, I'll read it if that's okay. Is that okay?
That's fine.
I'll read my own words. It's funny to hear you guys talk about this story. This is the Rhea and Judgment Rock story as being almost too weird. I think everyone gets to that point with the Morrison book at some point, although I think his later arcs with the New Brotherhood and the Candlemaker sort of bring it all back together. Mm-hmm. I was too much of a Rhea and Lodestone fan to see how scattershot all of these issues were. I also thought that the ending of this war with the Potlatch was a very pleasing ending, as well as showing the insanity of war. Plus, this was still a young and impressionable Ange reading this and just soaking in the bizarreness after decades of straightforward comics. But I absolutely remember friends of mine dropping the book at this point because they felt it was, quote, weird for weirdness's sake. That said, I eventually get there with them. I think it's in the upcoming arc where we see a soldier under the Pentagon forced to bounce on a bouncy ball to travel and told he needs to dye his pubic hair green.
Yes.
There isn't a whiff of reason why that is all happening, just insane and probably unnecessary. And then I went on to say that I thought Rhea's ending of flying away as someone all-powerful without any goodbyes reminded me a bit too much of Miracle Man's omnipotent and omniscient baby daughter, also just pointing to a star and flying away. Could this have been the beginning of Moore's curse you Morrison for copying me feud? Wow. And then I ended by saying, weird to be emailing you knowing I'll be on the show, but there it is. And there it is.
Wow.
Is it like podcast inception or something?
I don't know. That's very good. So what's your answer, Ange, to who needs to graduate to have their own book?
I am desperate for a good Legion of Superheroes book. So I thought it would be interesting. Within the Legion, there's something called the Legion Espionage Squad, which is sort of their black ops, secret dealing sort of group. It's Phantom Girl, yep. Shadow Lass, Shrinking Violet, and it would be great to just make that book. So it's outside of the bright colored adventures. It's them, kind of looking in the darker corners of the future universe. It could be an all-female team as another draw. That's what I would say.
Absolutely. I'd love that. That'd be great. Love some Legion. Mike, what about you? You got an answer?
Kind of, sort of.
Homework you should do.
I actually couldn't think of anyone that I would really want to see who hasn't already had a solo book or, graduated from a team and got their own title. So I'm going to be a little bit boring and I'm going to talk about kind of late last year during the Trinity War story in the Justice League books. There was a cameo by this team of kind of misfit, kind of superpowered dudes that were kind of operating in the shadows, and they got into a bit of a fight with the Justice League, and they went by the name of the Doom Patrol. Now, I think they were really interesting characters, and I think, we haven't seen them really since. We've seen them a little bit in Justice League United, but I think we need to see more of them. I think they could do really well. And, DC likes to take chances on things, so I think the timing might be right.
They could steal a trick from Marvel and call it the all-new Doom Patrol.
They could, yeah.
You have to be careful how you say that. Oh, it sounds like the all-nude Doom Patrol.
God. What's your answer, Paul?
I'm pretty sure that you guys would get behind me on this. Mm. Steve Dayton, fifth richest man in the world.
Oh, my God. I'm being trolled on my own show. Good God.
I'm serious. I would read that. I think it would be interesting. I think, you could you could say a lot about the world, you know. You could have a go at some of the things going on in politics and in the way wealth and power and politics all collide these days.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I would want it to be like remember the Joker had a solo series in the 70s where at the end of every issue he had to be defeated and put in jail. So I would read a Memento book if at the end of every issue he gets it's like beaten up and chastised.
Now we're talking. Okay, let's get this going. Look, all DC needs to do is bring back the Doom Patrol by fighting Reactron, having Supergirl show up, have Memento try and help, but failing. And look, they could all go off on their own new separate books and everyone's happy. It's a win-win.
All right, my more acceptable answer would be the Adventures of Mala and the Brain.
Oh, okay. So you've gone for like the anti-hero / villainous route.
Yeah, I think it's the wave of the future. We're getting a Poison Ivy miniseries. I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before every villain starts starring.
Right.
Villains are cool. They're hot right now.
Imagine if DC did like a whole month dedicated to the villains.
Imagine if they did that and they didn't stuff it up.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know that that Mala and Brain book might work if they're trying to do evil, but at the end it always turns out that they're doing good, and they're like, "Wait a minute, are we good guys or bad guys?"
Plus, they could be a couple, which makes it even more interesting.
Yes. Okay. Yes, this is true. Okay. I'll back your Mala and Brain book well and truly before I back a Memento book. Ye gods.
Yes.
I think that's it for this episode of Waiting for Doom. Ange, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us. It's been lots of fun having you on. And thanks again, as always, for all your wonderful support and emails and encouragement since we've been going, basically. It's really appreciated.
Hear, hear.
Well, thank you guys so much. As a huge Doom Patrol fan, this was I just love the show and love to take part in these conversations.
Fantastic. So we'll sign off for now. If you want to get in touch with us, you can always reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you can check us out on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page and our Tumblr page as well. So, Paul, what will we be talking about on the next episode?
The next episode, it will be about Doom Patrol Volume 2, Number 10, which is square in the middle of the Kupperberg era. Mm-hmm. And it has a crossover with Superman Volume 2, Issue 20. So Ooh. We get a bit of Doom Patrol Superman Metallo action.
Nice.
And the question of the week for the next episode is, what's the best crossover in comics?
Not the Supergirl ones, according to one person.
Ange got in early with his answer this
year. Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're going to take next week off and be back in 2 weeks' time. So, but this is an extra long episode, I'm guessing. So enjoy.
Yes. It's like a 68-page comic from the 70s with no ads.
It's an 80-page giant.
Yeah.
Chock full of Supergirl and Doom Patrol.
And it's free. Lucky you guys.
Yes, exactly. Great content.
Yes. Thank you. All right, guys, that's it for this week. We will see you again in 2 weeks' time and catch you next time on Waiting for Doom.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Ange.
Thank you again. Bye-bye. I promise that I will try not to do any men at work jokes during this time.
don't limit yourself.
Well, I've actually just started recording, so we've got you on tape now.
Oh, excellent.